On this episode, we smoke the Cinco de Mayo from Rojas Cigars, and we talk a little bit about the history of Mexican tobacco and, well, Cinco de Mayo. I'm your host, Johnny Midas, and you're listening to Burn Line Podcast. Burn Line Podcast. The burn line on a well-crafted cigar is straight and sharp as a razor, much like our wit and wisdom. And what is up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, over the age of 21, you are listening to Burnline Podcast, coming to you, as always, not live from the Hot Box, the smoky back room where deals are struck and fortunes are made adjacent to the Blanco Cigar Lounge, nestled amongst the complex of rooms that comprise Union Cigar, Hanover, Pennsylvania, USA, the only Blanco Cigar Lounge in North America. I am your host, Johnny Midas.
Yo soy Angel El Fumo Solario.
And I'm joined by El Fumo, and we are doing Cinco de Mayo. So we are smoking the Cinco de Mayo by Noel Rojas. Yeah. And we're celebrating Cinco de Mayo, and we're early, but we're releasing this on Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, so it all works out. May the 4th be with you on top of that.
Yes, wait, what?
Today's the 4th.
Oh, so they got their holiday off by one day from Star Wars Day.
Yeah.
I never realized that before.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of awkward. That's like celebrating a holiday on December 26th.
I guess.
All right, and we will talk about the history of Mexican tobacco and cigars, as well as Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. Something happened. A lot of beer got sold. I think that's the important takeaway.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, like... we'll talk about it. Thank you, Anheuser-Busch. So, opening up the old Fat Boys Cigars stick box, pulling out the treasure. There you go.
Nice.
That is fucking loud. Hard to read. A little obnoxious. I love it. Definitely on brand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it goes right in with the Street Taco branding. I mean, it is a street taco.
Yeah. Rojas Street Taco.
So the other ones are what? Yellow and green?
Yellow and green, yeah.
And then this is like this turquoise blue and red.
I love it. I love this color scheme. Actually, out of all the color schemes, this is my favorite.
This is really cool looking.
Hell yeah. I love the bandito.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a Dia de los Muertos skull with like the diamonds in it or something.
By the way, do you see the resemblance here?
I do see the resemblance. So there is a picture of El Fumo on the wrapper.
Yeah, that's right. I was the model, by the way.
Yeah, you were the model, still getting royalties.
Yep.
In Cello, it does have the retailer's barcode on the back, says Rojas, and it has the size. This is a Toro 6x52. So this is rolled in the Rojas factory, blended by Noel Rojas. Let's see if he's got the... I might have to take the wrapper off because of the glare.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for the small ring gauge only. I don't see that on here. Mm-hmm. Which is probably a good thing because it's a 52, which is like medium ring gauge for me. I think 48 and 50 are small. But whatever. The presentation is excellent. I don't have a box with us. It looks like the other street tacos with this color scheme.
Right.
Super loud. Let's just take that out of the cello and semi-closed foot. It's not like the closed.
Right.
But like a lot of his stuff. Gorgeous Colorado colored wrapper. Slightly toothy. It's got some oil on it, but like that part of the leaf is a little shinier with oil, and that part's real matte. This is a really good-looking cigar. There's a couple of veins and stuff in here that sort of, I think, add, like, character.
Yeah.
Where it's not, you know, if the whole cigar looked like that section right there, you'd wonder if it was, like, you know, a gas station punch cigar
right,
or something. You know, like, that is really beautiful. I love the presentation on that. And this is an Ecuador and Habano wrapper.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep seeing those. Like we said, that's a thing. A delicious wrapper, by the way.
The binder is Mexican San Andres. Now, there are multiple tobacco regions in Mexico. That's not the only one. We'll talk about that a little bit today. Fillers from Nicaragua and the USA with an MSRP of $12. So depending on your state taxes and how communist your state is, it'll run you a little higher than that. And this is a limited edition production run of 35,000.
Yeah. In Texas, there are no taxes.
But if we don't start smoking this, then what's the point of having it be a cigar show? So why don't we start with a cut and light? And our official cutting is brought to you by Fat Boy Cigars, the bold and delicious flavors of carefully hand-selected premium tobacco leaves are highlighted in the original Jack cigar by Fat Boy Cigars. And don't forget to try out their new releases, the War Pig. I think you're looking forward to that. The Twist and Shout Deuce, which I'm looking forward to. Check them out at fatboycigars.com. Great prices for great cigars. We're happy to partner with them on this show. Fat Boy Cigars, welcome to the Fat Boys world.
Arriba.
Arriba. I am going to cut mine with my close-ended Drew Estate. This is like the exact same as the Freestyle Live Cutter, but it's not, and it's like gray tones. I don't know why I like this cutter.
It's a gorgeous looking cutter.
Isn't it? Yeah. Like, it's so good looking. All right. And as always, we remind you to clip that cigar.
Yeah, right here.
With authority, no limp-wristed cutting allowed. And I just fucked my wrapper up.
Yeah, I need to recut. It's a weird cap. There you go.
Look, I split my wrapper.
Oh, no. Too much authority.
100% user error. I can tell you that these are properly humidified. So I've had these for a little bit. I got a 5-pack and then I got 2 sticks. I bought the 2 sticks for the show and then I bought the 5-pack because I wanted
the collection.
And to smoke one before the show and stuff. But these particular sticks have been in my perfectly humidified 64% humidity humidor. So quality control. Since I did have to order these online, you got to be super careful about making sure they're conditioned correctly. So for all of you guys out there, if you do order online, not recommended, you know, but if you do, always take time to condition them. You don't know how they came from your supplier.
All right.
But that is disappointing. I'm hesitant to even call that user error, but it did split, and hopefully that won't affect my cigar smoking experience too much, too badly. All right, let's get it lit. The official lighting is brought to you by 2C Premium Coffee, which we are currently enjoying. Bean Bala. Featuring select beans from Bali, Kenya, Ethiopia, and around the world, 2C Premium utilizes continual roasting, so you are always getting a truly fresh cup of premium coffee, and don't forget their new Mexican coffee. Recently released, check them out, 2cpremium.com, Morning Made Us. And I'm going to officially light with my gold bar, single flame, soft flame. And I'm going to try to just toast the foot.
Try to taste a little bit of just the wrapper.
Don't burn it off. I think the soft flame is better, honestly, for closed foot. So with a closed foot, you know, I used to just burn it off. I used to just burn the closed foot off.
Right.
And then Francisco was like, no, they do that so you can taste just the wrapper.
And I'm like, why didn't they ever say that?
I don't know.
It's like...
Well, actually, it reminds me of the cellophane thing. So we're going to talk about that with the tobacconist tip of the week.
Okay.
But they're, like, there's the reason and then there's the marketing reason. But anyway.
Oh, Stacey.
Yeah, so I'm getting... With just the wrapper, there's definitely like that wood component. I'm not sure it's exactly cedar. There's like a coffee coffee, cedar wood, and then what is it? Anise.
Yeah.
That little anise component. All right.
Tastes like carne asada.
It kind of does taste like carne asada. Were you trying to be funny?
A little bit, but it actually, like, that's what I got.
Here's what I get. I get the distinct impression when you consume carne asada, you're like tasting a completed dish, but you can pick it apart and be like, oh, I taste this, I taste that, right? I feel like that's what we're doing with the cigar. Like, if you take in the whole flavor, it's like a, you know, carefully prepared dish, and it tastes amazing. Or you can try to taste the individual components, but I don't think you're supposed to.
Okay.
You know?
I don't know. I get it.
Because there's nothing that, you know how some cigars are like, this is supposed to taste like coffee with, you know, marshmallow in the background.
Right.
Right? But other coffee or other cigars are like, you know, this is supposed to taste like whatever, you know, like the red meat line by Saka. You know, this is supposed to taste like a peppered ribeye.
Right. And you said it really didn't.
Yeah. But I feel like this cigar is supposed to have a finished flavor all its own, similar to like a crafted meal, as opposed to having some distinct flavors.
Right.
And as always, we remind you, toasted, not roasted. And if you do toast properly, not roast, your first few puffs can be absolutely amazing. I think Nick was the first person I met besides me that felt that way. And I would always keep it to myself because, I mean, even in the cigar industry, you know, people in the industry for years, you talk to them and they're like, yeah, just, you know, like, let it sit, ignore the first few puffs, you know, it's only an eighth of an inch in before you're really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's what I was always told.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I disagree. Like, if you toast it properly, that first puff and those first two can be amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Especially with that closed foot situation.
Mm-hmm. So my first comment is, I'm not a fan of the 52 ring gauge.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like a 52 to me.
Does it feel a little big?
No, it feels a little smaller.
Actually, does it? It
feels like 48 for some reason. I know it's a 52, but it just feels like a 48.
And the reason I don't is, this is the biggest I can go before it starts getting uncomfortable with my lips getting a seal around it. Yeah, okay. So what are you tasting so far?
A little bit of, like, spicy and chocolate. Like, a little, some cayenne, not black pepper. A little spicy. A
little bit, yeah.
And like I said, I was only half joking, but I do taste some meat. Oddly enough.
I don't think I'm getting that. I'm getting anise or licorice. Wood, it might be cedar. I'm not sure if it's cedar.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting to, a little bit of cedar plank.
There's some umami in there. I wouldn't call it meat, but there's umami in there. It's almost more like mushroom to me. And a touch of coffee. I don't think it's the coffee that we're drinking. I think it's the stick.
Yeah, I'm going to pull this off. It's actually messing with my retrohale.
I was kind of hoping you would set it on fire accidentally. all right, so the Cinco de Mayo street tacos, Cinco de Mayo, this is the biggest street taco, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. It's a burrito.
Yeah, so production run of 35,000, and the plan is to make an annual release with different blends.
Oh.
So it reminds me of the Las Calaveras from Crown Heads, and this is not the first Cinco de Mayo cigar from Rojas. It is the first one branded as such, but to celebrate Cinco de Mayo last year, Noel collaborated with United and produced the Elote firecracker.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You want to translate that?
It's just corn firecracker.
Yeah.
You said Elote firecracker.
Street corn. Street firecracker is like a vitola, basically. But yeah, the Elote. So it's like street corn.
Street corn, yeah.
But that was to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. And then I guess, like, he was like, wait a minute, why not just make a Cinco de Mayo?
Right, why not?
And then, yeah, so the plan is to do this every year.
Yeah. You got breakfast tacos and street tacos.
Yeah. And so that's kind of what is going on here. And it does say limited edition 2024 on the band. And it is a double band. I've got mine like mushed together. Mm-hmm. Looks like they're on there kind of loose.
Yeah, the bottom one is. The little smaller one is.
Mm-hmm. Really good looking. I like the branding.
Yeah.
It's on point.
Tell you what, very little smoke output.
Yeah, it is not smoky.
Yeah, I'm not. I thought it was a mustache messing with my retrohale, and it's just tough to get some through.
Yeah, I would like more smoke off of this.
Mm-hmm.
Not a ton more, but kind of reminds me of the Byron we smoked.
Yeah.
It's just not producing enough, but maybe that'll change. We'll see.
Really wonder what the science is to that.
Well, for the most part, like, I don't know about the science, but the lower on the plant that the leaf is, the kind of more even it burns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also typically the bottom leaves are less oily. And so, you know, they burn like nice and steady and slow. But your oily leaves do put out like thick smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the balance of the position on the plant that can affect that, as well as certain like breeds, right? So a smoky leaf. San Andres is smoky. Pennsylvania broadleaf is smoky. Your Dominican Habano
mm-hmm.
is surprisingly smoky. Like, it's not that thick, oily, chewy smoke from like a Pennsylvania broadleaf, but it is surprisingly smoky. It's a much lighter, like white smoke. But you know, you can just roll one of those up and smoke it, and you get a good mouthful of smoke every time. So I think some of it has to do with, you know, your breeds and then ultimately what position on the plant, you know, what type of tobacco and how you blend it.
Yeah,
anytime I'm doing the thing where I'm like taking multiple puffs to get enough smoke in my mouth to taste it, I'm not a fan of that.
No, I agree. Tell you what, that's some really white ash.
What did you call me? It is burning pretty well. It's burning a lot quicker than I thought it would.
Yeah. You can see the expansion on it, too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and look, it caused a split in my wrapper here.
Uh-huh.
It expanded. That's 100% just from burning. Yeah, so still, like, that cedar note, I'm not sure if it's kind of evolving into generic wood.
Yeah, it's right around there.
There's a sweet, I'm calling it brown sugar component in there.
It's an Ecuadorian, like I said. Mm-hmm. The pepper, or the cayenne, has died down for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've still got like a black pepper note on the, especially like on the retrohale. But that's tamed down. It's interesting.
Something nutty.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
Yeah, it's delightfully complex.
There's a couple other notes in there I can't get like what it is.
I think it's burning fast because we're chugging it a little bit because we're trying to get enough smoke
mm-hmm.
to have commentary.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. But it is complex, like you said. It's like there's two or three notes there that I can't figure it out. And then, but I'm having to double puff to get enough smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, to me it's like a, you know, like a, I don't know. Like beef tartare, you're not there like, I taste, you know, chopped up raw beef, and I think I taste an egg, and, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's supposed to be enjoyed as a finished product. And that's why I think, like, digging into the individual flavors is a little challenging.
Yeah.
It doesn't present that way. It presents like a finished meal, kind of.
Tell you what, though. Well, we can't talk, we're still trying to figure out the flavors. I want to say medium body.
Mm-hmm.
Medium strength?
Yep. This is definitely a medium.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to get stronger than that.
Doesn't feel like it's going to get stronger. No. And I think like the licorice pepper, I think that is probably from the Mexican binder.
Okay.
I think the brown sugar and cedar is from the Ecuadorian wrapper. And I'm not sure what the Nicaraguan and USA are bringing to the mix.
Yeah, right, I can't tell.
Other than probably a pepper note. So social media's looking good out there. Appreciate all of the followers on YouTube and what do you say our reach at Facebook is like 3,000?
3,000, yeah.
So pretty sharp. And then of course, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. And you can watch the podcast on YouTube or listen to it, Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever podcasts are found.
Except for Amazon.
Yeah. If you're listening on Spotify, there is a question for you. What was smoking about this episode? You can fill that out, or you can DM us, or you can reach the show at burnlinepodcast@gmail.com. And today's question comes from burnlinepodcast@gmail.com. And this is from Marissa. And Marissa says, what gives with the cello? You guys talk about it a lot. Sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't, but there has to be a reason that companies use it. And that's going to be our tobacconist tip of the week after we come back from this break. Don't go away. Tobacconist Tip of the Week with Angel Solorio. And we are back on Burnline Podcast, uncommon cigar knowledge for the common cigar smoker. You are listening to the dulcet tones of Johnny Midas and El Fumo. And El Fumo, let's hear that Tobacconist Tip of the Week. What is the deal with cellophane?
All right, so the deal with cello, there's actually many reasons, but one of the main reasons is the to control the tobacco beetle situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't really do much about them. And this is not cigarette tobacco, so there's no pesticides allowed.
Right.
Plus, dude, can you imagine smoking a cigar that was sprayed with pesticides? You would taste that the whole way. That tobacco would be done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what the main reason is for. But other good reasons is, like, for retailers, you know, brick-and-mortar retailers, you know, people are picking up the cigars and touching them and, you know, abusing them.
Right, right.
So that helps.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and cello is the new thing.
Right.
Right. There's fewer and fewer non-cello wrap sticks. So, yes, the primary reason for cello is the tobacco beetle. You know, if it's in a cigar, it sticks to one cigar.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, you know, chewing a line through hundreds of cigars and destroying them, you know.
You know what's weird? So this is not a call out or like a you suck, but for some reason, I've noticed this across many shops. I'm talking about many shops. The T52, I think the Papa's Fritos, or one of the T52s had an issue there for a couple years where it's like, if you didn't take care of it, it was pluming and beetling.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
You can see holes. Yeah, I'm not sure what that was about, man. Yeah. But look it up, man. There's plenty of pictures of that T52 taking a shit in humidors.
And the flying pig.
Yeah.
Right, which is just a Vitola.
Right.
The T52.
It's so weird. But if you want to see what it looks like,
they didn't sell wrap them.
Yeah.
You know? So they were sharing. You know, you get one beetle in one leaf in one cigar, and the whole box is.
Yeah, you're done.
Invested, you know?
Sure, you can try the freezer trick, but...
Well, the thing with tobacco beetles is it's not a big deal for your smoke until they pop through the wrapper.
Right.
And then you're drawing air in through that hole. Yeah. It messes everything up. And then you get a hot spot there. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you've got a cavity in the side of your... You know,
you're not going to taste the beetles.
You're not going to taste the beetle. Yeah, like they're tiny. They don't matter.
Right.
You know, it's an organic product. Free protein.
That's right.
But there's two other reasons why cello is super popular. One is, you know, with COVID and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, I was about to mention that. Yeah, COVID.
Customers feel safer, like nobody was finger-fucking this in the, you know, in the shop.
And collectability. It helps with some cigars, like the Opus Sexus.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, cello rep, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it also helps to maintain some level of humidity and consistency. Mm-hmm. With the cigar, when you're shipping it, it's a huge benefit.
You know,
Like, if you live in a state that gets reasonably cold, and it does here,
yeah,
right? Well, most of these cigars are shipped via UPS, and it's cold in the back of that truck. It sits there for hours. You know, the cello helps keep it from evaporating.
Right. And it's, you know, first it sits on the ship for what, a day or two?
Uh-huh.
And then it's sitting on that yard for who knows how long. So the cigars have a rough road before they get to your mouth.
And the final, you know, benefit of cellophane is the manufacturer can put a UPC barcode on there. Everybody's point of sale system uses. And there goes the ash.
There it goes.
Nice. That was a big one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like everyone's point of sale system uses a scanner now. And then if you don't have that, then it's like, what do you do with those cigars? Do you stick a price tag on them?
I mean, I have seen UPCs on the wrapper, which is kind of weird, but...
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Or a QR code, yeah. You know, like, depending on how big your band is, mm-hmm. you can put some stuff on there.
Yeah, that QR code is starting to be a game changer, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that is the thing.
But thanks for the question.
And be sure to reach out, bartlinepodcast@gmail.com, or hit us up on the DMs, and we will do our best to make this your show on Bartline Podcast. And touching on the smoke really fast, this is the Rojas Street Tacos Cinco de Mayo Limited Edition 2024. This is a 6x52 Toro featuring an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper with a San Andres Mexican binder and fillers from Nicaragua and the United States with an MSRP of $12. And in terms of taste, there's a little bit of lemongrass or something with a little bit of that citrus sour in there. Definitely, you know, pepper instead of cayenne. And it's kind of muted, you know, it's just a little bit. Like on the back of the tongue.
Try the French inhale real quick. Like I said, I get more meat if I do it that way.
There's like a thick bodied umami in there, but I'm not sure I would call it meat, but I see where you're coming from.
Maybe mushroom?
I'm reminded more of a mushroom, yeah.
That's where the meatiness is coming from.
Why was the mushroom always invited to the party? Because he was a fun guy.
He's a fun guy.
It's pronounced fungi with a J.
Is it fungi? Or is that plural?
No, Fungi is a happy man practicing jujitsu. All right. and also, there's a little bit of that, like, citrusy.
Yeah, it's
acidity.
Weird.
I'm going with lemongrass.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a touch of, like, vegetal in there.
I'm getting some nutmeg.
Touch of sour. Are you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm tasting that, but I think a little cocoa is starting to emerge. But it's something more on the baking spice side.
Yeah, that's...
of things, for sure. Interesting. All right, so let's talk about Cinco de Mayo. Let's talk about Mexican...
not Independence
Day. Cigars. Well, so the actual Cinco de Mayo holiday celebrates the Battle of Puebla.
Yeah.
1862, and that was the French...
French.
Yeah, like Mexico has just gone through waves of colonization.
Right.
It was like, what, the Spanish first, and then the French. And then even like, you know, like, it just gets weird because like Santa Ana.
Fuck that guy. But
like, it's like he wasn't colonizing, but he was like a fascist. Like he was.
I would say he was the first organized ruler of Mexico post.
Yeah.
Aztec Empire.
Yeah.
And colonization.
Yeah. He was kind of trying to do the same thing.
Right.
But he's like, oh, but I'm Mexican and we're Mexican. It's like, yeah. I don't know, dude. Like, you know, that's like, you know, whatever. Like when the British invaded India.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had some Indian guy come out and say, I'm going to do everything the British were trying to do, but I'm Indian, so it doesn't count, you know.
And then people saw, oh, you're full of shit.
Yeah, fuck it. You're just trying to take, you know, the same power or whatever.
Yeah, and that was the Second French Empire,
mm-hmm.
which is Napoleon Bonaparte's grandson.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be Napoleon III.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah.
Yes, the I don't know, must run in the family.
Yeah.
Although the original Napoleon, like, he was obviously flawed just from inheriting the Middle Ages mindset of how humans are supposed to behave towards each other.
Right.
But he was a very interesting fella. You know, like, his court symbol was the bee, and he was all about industry and, like, you know, the evolution of the French. But then that was coupled with, because, you know, in feudal Europe, you were supposed to conquer your neighbors at some point.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, yeah, it's natural.
Yeah, like, you had to keep knocking on the borders and,
right,
you know, I'm going to take something from you, you take something from me, and, you know, make sure everyone knows I still have balls, you know, all that.
That's right.
All that bullshit, you know. Because they were just warlords. Same thing with feudal Japan. Like, it's feudalism. And he turned that into, like, you know, a Roman-esque,
yeah,
empire building. You know, we're not feudal anymore. Now we're all united against everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. For a little over a decade, man, he was like, yeah, you're mine.
Yeah. Interesting guy.
Yeah, I mean, the reason he never really got to England, because England's got, like, what we have going on here. That body of water just saved their ass so many times.
Yeah, and also the British mindset at the time was interesting.
Yeah, and they've only been united for not that long, technically, at the time, but they were united.
Yeah. Yeah, that stiff upper lip thing. You know, like, we're not currently invading the rest of the planet, but we'll be damned if we're going to let you tell us what to do.
Right.
You
know? It's like, oh, hey, the British are taking a break on colonizing, and then Napoleon took over, and they're like, yeah, now we got to do it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Better us than them.
That's right.
Anyway, Cinco de Mayo wasn't really a holiday until, I'm pretty sure it was Anheuser-Busch.
Anheuser-Busch in the late 80s. They were like, commercial holiday, you know.
Yeah, like, exactly. Valentine's Day, Easter, Christmas, obviously.
St. Patty's.
Didn't, like, Gimbals invent Santa Claus or something?
Like, somebody did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some ad guys in New York, they're like, let's take this legend about this German monk guy named St. Nicholas and give him a sleigh and some magic reindeer that fly.
Perfect.
Yeah,
it's the Mexican St. Patty's.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, like, either way, at the end of the day, both those heritages or cultures are tied together anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
a little bit about Mexican cigars, right? So the history of cigars in Mexico is fascinating, and it's, like, the perception is changing, but to this day, you can Google it and read something, the Spanish introduced tobacco to Mexico, and they quickly became adept at blah, blah, blah. But then if you talk to, you know, like, archaeologists and stuff like that, it's just not the case. But the Mayans smoked cigars, and they were more like, you know, from the carvings and the drawings, like, they were actually much larger tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were, like, that big.
Right.
And they appear to be, like, just one leaf or two, maybe, rolled up. You know, they didn't have the centuries of practice and craftsmanship, you know, to produce what we're enjoying. But here's some interesting facts about pre-colonization Mexico. Of course, you had the Mayan Empire, which stretched, you know, all the way. Like, they had mines in Bolivia and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or what were they importing? Was it, I can't remember, I think it was jade.
Mm-hmm.
They had mines in, like, Bolivia and stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting export, and obsidian and stuff like
that. Yeah, crystals and stones.
So
obsidian was very important.
Yeah. I mean, that's what all of your cutting tools and stuff were made out of. And it's pretty.
It's hard to work. It's sharp, man. Yeah. It's a glass rock.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. They used it for, you know, butchering stuff and then actually doing surgery, believe it or not.
Yep.
It's like they were doing surgery with
obsidian
thousands of years ago.
So they have carvings, Mayan carvings, of the gods smoking cigars.
Mm-hmm.
They have...
Even with pipes.
Yeah. They have artwork of, like, priests and kings, you know, with... And they buried some rulers with their cigars. And they actually believed that the clouds were cigar smoke of the gods, and that shooting stars were like embers from the tobacco. So it was a part of the culture long before the Spanish. So I don't know where the story came that the Spanish introduced it.
The only thing I can think of with that post-colonization is like maybe better cultivation. That's about it.
Yeah, or different seeds or something.
Yeah, it was just that. It was just that.
Maybe like turning it more into an industry or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Because Europe was already ahead of the game in agriculture.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very Mesoamerica.
Or at least monocrop agriculture.
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, the mines were still, Mesoamerica was still hunter-gatherer, but they still had some agriculture. You know,
mm-hmm.
they were just starting to get into it, you know, primarily like corn,
sugarcane. Yeah. I mean, really, like, a large portion of the rainforest is actually cultivated plants.
Yeah.
They were a little bit more, I think they were a little bit more into, like, fruit trees
mm-hmm.
cultivation than actual grains. I think a lot of that was still, you know, like, we call it semi-agriculture.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to encourage you to grow and we're going to water you, but you can look at the, you can actually look at the plant to see cultivation, and they were doing it, right? They were planting and stuff with maize,
mm-hmm.
For example, but in any case, tobacco was a big part of their religion
yeah.
and their culture.
Yeah,
and then really like the where we kind of pick up the story, though, is the 1850s,
yeah.
around there. And a couple of large families emerged. I mean, they had huge estates. And then something really interesting happened, which is the Dutch were growing tobacco in Sumatra. Right, Indonesia, that's where the term Sumatran tobacco comes from. If you go back to Victorian times, Sumatra was like, kind of like Dubai. Like Dubai is part of the United Arab Emirates
mm-hmm.
in the same way that Sumatra is part of Indonesia. But people don't say, I'm going on vacation to UAE. They say, I'm going on vacation to Dubai.
Right.
And so it was this like semi-magical oriental land that because of the trade in that area, you could actually take a vacation to
yeah.
in, you know, Victorian Europe. If you wanted to get a taste of the exotic while not leaving all the comforts of home behind, you know,
right.
So like touristy. And what happened was the Dutch got kicked out. So it's called the Sukarno Takeover. And they basically like kicked the Dutch out. It was kind of like a we're taking our country back
yeah.
sort of thing. And the Dutch went to Mexico. They actually went all over, but they were looking for a place that could grow great tobacco that had reasonable infrastructure and they could get their ships in and out, you know. And they really like homed in on the San Andres region. Mm-hmm. And they did experiments and then they left. Right, so for whatever reason, they didn't stick around, but they left their seeds.
Yeah,
and they left, you know, what they were doing, and that was like the basis for this expansion of these huge estates.
Yeah.
in Mexico for growing tobacco. So the San Andres Valley is, you know, pretty popular. Like that's what everyone's heard of. Or region. They're like, there's a valley there, but it's like a whole region. There are other places they grow tobacco. In Mexico, they're just less famous. The two big factories are in San Andres.
Mm-hmm.
The Teamo.
Teamo, yep.
Yep, everyone's heard of that.
Casa 1910, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the... which factory is that? Got it in here somewhere. I can't remember which one. The other factory is Tabaco Santa Clara.
Mm-hmm.
So those two, you know, are like the two big ones. And if I'm remembering correctly, they have like 1,000 acres. You know, it's still run like a family company, but that's a big fucking tobacco farm.
Yeah.
And then, so they had like, basically like wars and revolutions in Mexico. And a lot of this stuff just got broken apart. So by around, like, I don't know, the 1910s, like 1910 era,
yeah.
they were kind of restarting. And they have a long, but they have a long tradition of high quality tobacco exports, you know, puros. You know, one of the things that San Andres had that only Cuba had until, you know, the 1980s was the ability to make a really good cigar that was a puro. Right? Wrapper, binder, filler all came from the same region. And I think Cuba was the only other place that was really doing that.
Yeah.
And to this day, like, Dominican Republic does not produce wrapper leaf. No. It's only the Opus X. Last I checked, I haven't seen another cigar on the market with a Dominican wrapper.
No.
Right? And so, you know, but a lot of countries can, or regions can produce, like, a puro, but they're not very good.
No.
So Nicaragua has emerged, but it's almost not fair because they have four distinct regions.
That yeah, very different really tobacco.
So it's kind of, and they're big. So it's kind of like cheating, you know?
Yeah, it's like, hey.
Yeah, it's like an American puto. Yeah, but you got Michigan and you got South Florida. Like, there's a lot of regions there.
Right, there's a lot.
So.
Yeah, Casa Torrent is the other one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a fascinating history there. Now, I will tell you, in the industry, Mexican tobacco was not considered very good until 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years.
Yeah, it's only been 10 years. And right now, like, a San Andres Maduro wrapper is top fucking notch, but it's also become expensive.
Yeah.
Right? And that's one reason, like, when we're identifying trends on this show, we're like, be on the lookout, and you're going to see more and more, like, Ecuadorian Habano.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's still affordable.
Yeah.
And it's delicious. It's definitely a medium body wrapper, you know? But it's affordable and delicious.
Yeah.
And then, I think for me, for a lot of folks, where Mexican tobacco got the recognition it deserved was 2017, which is, what, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
When Crown Heads released the Juarez, and when people saw a Mexican wrapper, everybody was like, oh, this is not going to be great.
Right.
And then we smoked, and we're like, holy shit. You know, like the rich, like earthy, dirty, chocolatey flavor. And it was such a hit.
Yeah.
I think they still make it today.
Yeah.
I think Crown Heads does.
Yeah, and then I remember Francisco also picked it up because he was surprised as well when we talked about it. Mm-hmm. When I had that conversation with him, he was like, yeah, man, it took me by surprise. They got it down, and that's why he started using it.
And we're talking about Francisco Almonte of DBL Cigars.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. He is so full of knowledge.
Yeah, seriously. You
know, and passion. Like, he's fun to talk to. But, so, you know, I'm hesitant to talk that way. Just like Honduran tobacco is not famous. But in Honduras, you know, they've been making cigars since before the
Spanish. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm not shitting on Mexican tobacco, but I am saying among fine cigar manufacturers, they've really only developed the quality of product that is world class in the last 10 years. And that's, you know, so that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. Well, so the Ortiz family, if you have time, that's worth, like, reading into. They had, like, a family coup, you know, way back in the day where, like, the factory manager was, like, the great-grandpa, and the labor manager was the grandpa, and they were fighting with each other. And then the Mexican independence or whatever, they just took all the land.
Oh,
right. And left them with, like, 10%. And then they sold it all off because times were so tough.
Yep.
And then the family came back and rebuilt. And slowly built the whole brand up. So it was really, like, mid-20th century that Mexican cigars started being exported. The leaves kind of were, like, that's what the Dutch were trying to do, right? And, you know, the tobacco leaves were pretty good, pretty robust, and you could make a lot of different kinds. Though, I guess it has to do with a combination of the seeds and soil, but San Andres tobacco is more elastic than normal, which means you can make a really good wrapper out of it. Really, they were kind of making cigars for locals and exporting leaf.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until the mid-20th century they started exporting Mexican cigars, right? So most of the growing was for selling leaf. San Andres is the eastern part of the country, and of course, the kind of like the earthy flavor is the big selling point.
Yeah.
I've got a few more notes in here. I think that's about it. I mean, there's some really interesting, like, history in there. If you want to do some research, it's pretty cool if you're into that sort of thing. You know, some things that helped, obviously, the 1949 Sukarno takeover in Indonesia.
Yep.
You know, so mid-20th century, the Dutch came and were like, let's make this a industry. that helped. And then so did the Cuban Revolution, because you had some Cubans come down there, you know, with their knowledge.
Yeah.
And, you know, in case people forget pre-internet, like, having knowledge of stuff like that was incredibly valuable.
Oh, yeah.
That was your meal ticket, you know. You couldn't just Google how to plant a fucking tobacco seed and get it to grow nice, you know.
Yeah. And, like, tobacco is actually pretty hard to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not simple. It's not just, oh, let's water it. Like, there's a lot that goes into
growing. Yeah, like, if you're trying to get a high-quality product, mm-hmm. you know, make a fine cigar, and then it is, you're facing all of the elements that, you know, people have faced for 10,000 years of cultivation, because it has to be an all-natural product. You can't use pesticides and shit on it. You can breed them to be more hardy, but then also, does the leaf burn well and taste good?
Right.
Or is it like a thick piece of leather, you know, like an oak leaf or something, you know? Yeah, it's pretty hardy. Smokes like shit, though.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, just a windstorm or a hailstorm can destroy a whole crop.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. So I think that it is super appropriate to celebrate the Mexican contribution to fine cigars on Cinco de Mayo.
Right.
Happy Cinco de Mayo. Why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll do Cigar News of the Week.
All right.
Don't go away. Cigar News of the Week with Angel Solorio. And we are back on Burnline Podcast. You are listening to the crystal clear 10,000 watt voice of Johnny Midas and El Fumo on Burnline Podcast. Cigar News of the Week, what you got, buddy?
Are we syndicated since we're like in 10,000 watt?
Are we syndicated?
Are we?
Yes, we are. We are syndicated in my imagination.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is pretty interesting. So, Pro Cigar elected Lito Gomez as the new president.
Really?
Yeah, so that is some pretty wild news. I think this dropped Thursday.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I didn't even know there were talks going on.
It was like out of left field.
Yeah, so Lito, tell folks a little bit about Lito.
So, Lito Gomez is of LFD. So that is the other person.
He was Francisco's mentor.
Right. That's where Francisco got a lot of his knowledge from. You know, Lito Gomez has been in the game for a while. But Lito Gomez was actually born in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Raised in Uruguay. So
Uruguay, but yeah.
Uruguay. Uruguay. I was trying to do the English
version. Trying to do the Anglo version.
The Anglo.
Uruguay. We sound so fucking pagan.
All right. Well, anyways. He, obviously, LFD, who doesn't know LFD, whether mm-hmm. you smoke it or not, you know. And, like we said, Francisco got his knowledge from him, so Lito Gomez is pretty important to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird, it's like, so, are you stepping down from LFD?
Right, I don't know how that's going to work.
I mean, he could definitely do both. I was just like,
what does Pro Cigar do?
So, Pro Cigar is pretty much like another type of PCA, you know, mm-hmm. like those people. So, more advocacy, more like an organ association. So, another thing you can join as a cigar maker.
Because PCA is really about manufacturers sharing their stuff with retailers. It is not open to the public. And then you have, what is it, TCA, which is more like for consumers.
The consumer slash retailer.
Yeah. And it is open to the public. And then Pro Cigar is more of an advocacy group for the tobacco industry.
Yeah, they're mostly like the from the DR, Dominican Republic. Yes. They're mostly Dominican rollers and growers. So, you know, and if you buy a product from a member from Pro Cigar, there's a Pro Cigar sticker in the boxes. So,
and I think a little percentage of that goes to Pro Cigar.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a membership exclusively for manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's interesting. So, at least it's somebody who knows the industry and knows actual cigar rolling and all that at the helm. So, that'll be pretty cool. See what he does. So, the annual, they have a festival every year, but it's in the DR, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah, yeah. It is a Dominican group. Like, it's very Dominican-centric.
So. Right. But the cool thing about Pro Cigar is they give back to the Dominican community. So not only are they an organization, okay, we're not just collecting money for ourselves, but we help the community and the growers themselves if there's a tough time or something. It's kind of like, it's just like a farmer's conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that's going to be. So, you know, we'll...
I'm guessing it's not a full-time job. They'll probably keep his role. So.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, but...
Yeah.
It's cool to have Lito Gomez as the head.
And I just dumped some of this 110 proof Maker's Barrel Select.
Which one is it?
Coffee. This is the Barrel Select.
I was asking what year.
This 23.
So the recent one.
Yeah.
Cool. So, and then another news, STG actually reported a little bit of a not so profitable year, quarter one profit. So. Not that they lost a lot of money or weren't profitable, but it's down.
It's down.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure that that is related to their unsecured debt and structured debt payments that they have. So, you know, Scandinavian Tobacco Group is a big conglomerate, and they are in the M&A game.
Yeah.
And so how the game is played is you acquire, like, two assets, and then you take all of the debt and you dump it on one asset.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one can go into bankruptcy or whatever. It's just how the financial game is played. But what that means is when interest rates suck, it gets worse, right? And so it's just, you can't read anything into that because of how modern, giant, international corps are structured and how the laws work with the money and everything. So I look more at, like, import-export numbers, you know, cigar consumption versus how much money.
Because it's
all fucking, you know, I took six semesters of accounting in undergrad and grad, and I can tell you, like, it is an art and a science.
Yeah,
you know. So,
and just to drive home what you said, from what I was reading, part of the reason they went down is because they grew, so they acquired some more assets. So, like, you know, that counts as a down.
Yeah, like, depending on the asset you acquire, like, what is the debt level, you know, and then you paid money for it.
Yeah. Right?
So, and then, you know. So what is it? What is the specific wording? With down quarter one. So it says revenue was 1.95 billion DKK, which is roughly equivalent to 280 million US dollars. And then EBITDA is fucking bullshit. That's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, etc., amortization. So
I love that word so much.
Yeah.
Well, EBITDA.
Yeah, it's complete bullshit. That's like, you know, how much did you earn before you had to pay all the shit? You know, it's like, really? Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. So other than business operating expenses, you know, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You actually have to pay those things to run a business. So yeah, it's a little bit of monopoly money, but whatever, their actual earnings were down from projections, right? Anyway,
it's not bad.
I don't know. It's you can't decipher it because they're a conglomerate.
Right. You know? So, I mean, they own a shit ton, so.
Like, they could have acquired a distribution arm with a certain amount of revenue last year, and they could have shut it down in Q4, and boom, there goes your revenue.
Yeah.
but it's overall better for the company. You know, you just can't tell. Right. So,
all right.
And that was a friendly note from your friendly neighborhood MBA. Moving on to back us up.
So General Cigars is releasing through Punch. It's called Dad's Home Movies. And it's going to be releasing around Father's Day. This actually sounds pretty cool for me. You may or may not like it, only because it's a 6x50.
Interesting. I like that Vitola, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's a box of 10. Look, check out that box. It's cool as shit.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Be kind, unwind.
Right, nice. Yeah.
And it's like, it looks like a VHS tape.
Yeah, that's a leaf. It's so cool.
Yeah, Punch continues to do like awesome, slightly gimmicky marketing.
Right, yeah, that's pretty cool. So real quick, what do you think the per stick price is, MSRP?
So a Punch, I don't know, $10?
No, $7.49.
Nice.
So we talk about affordability here, uh-huh, and budget, and like, you know, we're like, it's hard to find something under 10 or under, mm-hmm, 11, but damn, Punch is like, nah, we're still going to be under.
Yeah, yeah, they're still producing 750 sticks. That's awesome. I mean, with what that box looks like, I would expect it to be more, right, just for the packaging.
So 8 at 10, $80.
And, you know, for those folks that, you know, are shitting on conglomerates like I just did, the only reason they can produce at that price is economies of scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that General owns Punch. So the consumer does benefit to some extent.
Yeah, so it's going to be with a Cameroon wrapper, mm, and a Connecticut broadleaf binder and fillers from Brazil and the DR, Honduras, and Nicaragua. Man, that's
an interesting construction.
That is a lot.
It's a lot going on, yeah. Cameroon and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what that's going to taste like.
I don't know, but I'm going to try it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's give that a shot. By the way, I just did the band test, and they came off perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
So, great job there, Rojas. Oh, did you notice there's a little QR code on the...
No.
On the band? Oh, no, it's not a QR code.
Nope.
It's the Rojas symbol. Yeah. And it's under the glue. It's folded over. So, that is just such a cool attention to detail. I love that. Any other cigar news of the week?
Yeah, another interesting move. Dan Gallagher is now promoted to president of Smoker Friendly.
Really?
So it's like a lot of industry moves there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it does seem like the post-cigar boom, it seems like the associations and defense groups are picking up.
Well,
more and more producers are realizing if we don't get involved in politics, we're fucked because...
Dude, it's coming down hard.
Dumb morons can't distinguish between like... fine cigars and cigarettes. Like, how fucking retarded are our politicians?
So, and unfortunately...
And he just got canceled.
Right. And more bad news on that front. Like, remember 2 weeks ago I talked about how Massachusetts... A county in Massachusetts is doing the generational tobacco ban.
And the Massachusetts Supreme Court
upheld it. And now every other municipality and county is like, okay, now we're going to do it.
Yeah, let's
try. So it's like, what? So now it's going statewide. And that's... what's probably prompting these...
It needs to go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's absolutely ridiculous. By the way, how fucking dare you tell folks you can't buy a cigar, but you can buy fucking marijuana and smoke it. You know? Like, that is smoking, dipshit.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're still inhaling secondhand smoke. It has all the stuff. But we know that smoking marijuana is not as harmful because it's not a damn cigarette. Well, guess what? Neither is a premium cigar.
Right.
It's not. It's a different product.
And it's kind of weird. Like, I mean, this is what I call it. The birthplace of freedom has now become one of the most restrictive states, you know, with other things.
I don't know. Like, and nobody looks at Massachusetts nowadays as leading anything good.
Right. No. You know? Them in Connecticut, man. It's so weird.
Well, but the dynamic, I don't know about Massachusetts. I know the dynamic with Connecticut is a bunch of rich people that work in New York live in Connecticut and commute.
Yeah.
And so Connecticut, there's two parts of Connecticut. There's the poor people that can't really get ahead and a lot of rural stuff in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, farms, tobacco, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's a bunch of rich people that have, like, privilege and money. And they're the ones that are really making the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these types of policies, you know, benefit a higher social strata than normal people. You know,
I mean,
you talk to anybody that's making 55 grand a year, 75 grand a year. They don't support policies like this. Yeah. You know, they're like, first of all, I work for a living. Yeah. And when I get home, I want to smoke something and drink something. Yeah. Get out of my fucking face.
And it's weird. I'm going to use it this way. But the unfortunate positive side, it's like it may lower prices for us. And availability, you know, and then increase availability.
Yeah, we got to sell the stock somewhere.
Yeah. It's like, what is that? 3 or 4 states total now that have generational tobacco bans moving through.
Yeah. Well, what a fucking test of our democracy and our freedoms.
Especially California being the biggest one. It's like they're effectively trying to kill the tobacco industry.
Like, I don't know. Top to bottom. I think when I look at, you know, policies coming out of California, most of them are centered around like paternalistic. It's definitely like a continuation of the patriarchy. It's a very paternalistic, you know, daddy knows best type of approach. But they couch it in this like, well, we're going to put it on a ballot measure. So now it's the people speaking. It's like, yeah, but the people speak whatever propaganda you put out. We know that because we've done scientific tests correlating the outcomes of ballot initiatives versus advertisement on TV and local propaganda.
Well,
and there's a statistically significant correlation.
Yeah. Well, these don't sound like ballot initiatives. That's the weird. No. It's the government just doing it on their own. It's like, nobody asked you to do this.
Right.
And then
where's the mandate?
You're right. Dude.
All right, that's enough damn politics.
Yeah.
Look at this ash. This is fucking gorgeous. Oh. Look at that.
Yeah.
This is high quality tobacco.
It really is. I mean, it's real awesome.
So, thanks for that. Tobacco news of the week. It is time to wrap this show up. Hard to believe that we've already been doing this for an hour. So, why don't we jump right into the ranking?
Okay.
And we're going to start with presentation. I don't have the box. It's your typical Gorgeous Street Tacos box. This one's just turquoise and red. I'll go first this time. I'm going to go with an 8.
Okay.
It is really well done and carefully crafted and thought through. I'm taking some points off because it's very loud and gaudy and a little clashy. It's actually hard to read the band, and especially if you have lights glaring off of the band, which we do. You know, you can blame the lighting, but come on, this is just regular kind of cigar lounge lighting. I think it's like very fiesta.
Yeah,
looking.
But that's the point.
I know, it's awesome, right? But I came in an 8 instead of a 9 or a 10 because the colors are kind of clashy and loud, and they reflect, everything reflects, everything's shiny on it. The box, the bands. So I'm going with an 8. What do you think?
I was actually going to go with a 9 because I liked it, but you're right about the glare.
It's just a little much, I think.
Yeah.
All right, so, and then price, MSRP of $12, so you can get these for MSRP from time to time, but remember, your state taxes are going to affect that.
Yeah.
So for a Toro, it's not cheap. What are you getting for it? Well, you're getting a great stick. You're also getting presentation that they put thought into, good presentation. Right. So price, I've got a 6, you know, I think $12 for a Toro. That really means, you know, you're paying 13 something, maybe 14. It's not great.
Yeah. I was going to give it a 7 because there's a lot to choose from at the $12 range.
Yeah.
So, and then this is a limited, and if you don't really know, you may or may not pick it up. I know we were going to pick it up as soon as it got announced.
Yeah. Like, I think that's part of the issue is like, oh, it's a limited dip. Yeah. Well, okay. So are you starting your collection? You know, every year it comes out, you're going to get the next. Are you? You know, maybe, but if you're charging more money for a limited edition, it needs to be more limited. Like 35,000 is a lot.
Yeah.
It either needs to be more limited or better, in my mind. So yeah, I think that's a fair. I think that's a fair pricing.
But it's not a bad price for a limited, though.
No, it's not a bad price. I think a 6 or a 7 is pretty fair there.
Yeah.
It's you know. It's a little better than middle of the road. Like 5 would be, okay, this is just middle of the road.
Right.
And a 4 would be, now you're starting to get overpriced. So, you know, it's good, but it's not like a great value or something.
Right.
All right, so construction, I've got several points to take off. So first of all, the burn, not like the burn, it burned well, but not enough smoke output. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's construction or blend, but there were some specific construction issues. The first is I popped my wrapper with my clip. That is a razor sharp cutter. Mm-hmm. These are perfectly humidified, as you know, because we smoked the whole thing.
Yeah.
Not over or under humidified. This is purely a construction issue, and it split right along a fault. Right? There's a vein here. It popped right there. And so now that I'm at the end, I can't really enjoy this. As well, I had it was burning a little too hot, mm-hmm. and my wrapper popped in the first third. So I've got to take some points off. I'm going with a 7 for construction. The band did come off perfectly and easily. So great, great job there. How about you? Yours was a little better. Yeah,
for mine, it was an 8, but I took the points off because I had to chug it to get some smoke mm-hmm. out of it. So, like you said, I don't know if that's a blend or what's up with that. But the banding coming off really easily was definitely a plus.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so then flavor. And I took, I smoked these before the show as well because I try to do that on most of our cigars because I want to be fair, mm-hmm. right? Notes of cedar that kind of turned to more generic wood, licorice, coffee, brown sugar, lemongrass, cayenne that turned into pepper. And then like the second third, I got some cocoa and something that was like black cherry. And then it got kind of creamy in the final third. Mm-hmm. So I think the flavor was really good. It's medium bodied. This isn't like a knock your socks off cigar,
right?
But it is a great cigar.
Yeah.
And kept my attention and I like the flavor. And when I think about the folks that I know that smoke cigars, I think almost all of them would smoke this and be like, hey, that was a pretty good stick. Mm-hmm. So I gave it a 8 for flavor.
Okay.
What are you thinking?
I was actually going to give it a 7.
Okay.
Only because I had to puff a lot to get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
But I do like the smoke coming off of it. It smells good. It's mm-hmm. not a stinky cigar.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing was, I just had to double puff every mm-hmm. time to get something out of it. But it's not a bad flavor. Yeah. It's really good.
So for me, this didn't produce the smoke I would expect it to produce until the final third, and I have the popped wrapper. And because the wrapper is popped, the cigar has expanded.
Mm-hmm.
So look at the difference in size, or let's turn it that way. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a difference.
Huge. Like this turned into a 54 ring gauge. And now suddenly it's smoking the way I would expect with the smoke output. Mm-hmm. That's not great. So I think the flavor was definitely affected by, I can't get any smoke in my mouth, And I think my wrapper popped because I'm doing double puffs and heating the tobacco up higher than I need to. Mm-hmm. My expectation is long, slow draw gets me a mouthful of cold smoke. That's a perfectly blended cigar. And so that's related to construction, but also flavor. Okay, so that's pretty fair. And then overall experience, I guess on my side, like if we talk about use case, at this price point, again, we're talking with taxes and stuff. Nobody's paying probably less than 13 mm-hmm. for it. I don't think this is really like, I might smoke it while I'm grilling. Probably not smoking it like, while doing anything else. Maybe like a Cinco de Mayo party or some kind of fiesta.
Right.
I think it would go great. Like, you're having some kind of fiesta or party. You're having tacos and Coronas.
Yeah.
And then afterwards you smoke this. I think it'd go great with that.
I think you could watch a cockfight with these.
Yeah. You could watch a cockfight. And then you can smoke it in the lounge. You're not going to gift it to anybody unless it's like, hey, here's a special edition. Why don't you try it out?
Yeah.
But not like, congratulations on winning the Masters. Smoke this, so I think it has a limited use case.
Yeah, it does.
And then unfortunately, I got to take points off the experience because the lack of smoke output mm-hmm. and having to double puff and chug and then my wrapper issues. I can't really finish this up. The wrapper's just coming off. And so I got a 6 for experience.
Yeah. I was going to give it a 7. Just because not much use case, and the double puffing is what ruined it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's definitely a great stick. It's just like...
It took too much attention
for
me. And at that price point, I expect there to not be these issues.
Right.
I don't expect it to be perfect.
Yeah, you definitely have to pay a lot of attention to the cigar.
Yeah, more than I would want to. So that brings the final score of the Rojas Street Tacos Cinco de Mayo Toro 6x52 to 37.
Oh.
So mid-high 30s, pretty good stick.
Yeah, not too bad.
And I think that's all we've got for everybody. I'm going to start getting drunk. Okay. It's before lunch, so it's just, I'm late.
Let's get started.
Drink
responsibly.
And we've got a surprise for folks next week, don't we?
Oh, we do.
Yeah, we got a little surprise for folks. Looking forward to it. Be sure to tune in next week. That's it, man.
Yeah.
Signing off, Burnline Podcast. Thanks for joining us. See you again next week.